don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome to another Cryptoconomy Quick Read. I wanted to skip. I did two extra ones yesterday that I'm just going to fill in for the rest of this week because I got a message from one of you guys. Whereas it was, his name was Trill. Let me go to my notifications. It was, yeah, Trill O'Byte. That's T-R-I-L-0-Byte. And he linked me to a tweet by Michael Goldstein, which the article is not by him. It's by Daniel Krawitz? Is that who it is? Yeah, there it is. Daniel Krawitz. And these two guys, of course, they're the ones with the good article bashing some app coins. should have been looking for the two of them to begin with anyway. But they've got a article. Daniel has an article titled App Coins Are Snake Oil, and this is at the Nakamoto Institute. And this one also comes with, he also tweeted a podcast episode. It's the Crypto-Mises podcast, and it's with Daniel Krawitz and Michael Goldstein, or at least the first episode is. That's the only one I listen to here while I'm working on the beam in my kitchen. And it's good. They make a lot of great points, and so I'm actually going to respond, even though obviously I'm not going to put that in my podcast. I'll link to it, and I am going to respond to a couple of points that I jotted down while I was working that they made that I have a little bit of, want to make a little challenge with, that not necessarily that I disagree with their position, but that I don't completely see the solidity of the point that they're trying to get at. That was also not an Ethereum joke. But this one is titled App Coins Are Snake Oil by Daniel Krawitz. Introduction. App Coins. What a great way to fund an open source project, right? The idea began with MasterCoin, but seems to have jumped from there to become its own meme. You just create an app, then make it less convenient by creating a cryptocurrency, or app coin, that is required to use it, some of which you sell to investors to pay for development of the app. There's no way that couldn't work. It's just like selling stock in a company, right? Wrong. As will be shown, whereas the value of a stock is related to the value of the company that issued it, there is no such connection between an app coin and an app. And there is consequently no reason to expect the app coin ever to become valuable. For this reason, app coins should not be considered a valid investment and are inappropriate as a means of funding open source projects. Furthermore, once the arguments in this essay become well enough understood by investors that it will be impossible to fund a project by selling an app coin because the price will rapidly tend to zero. The value of a stock. A stock is a contract between owners of an enterprise which grants its bearers the right to a portion of the liquidation value of the company and to any dividends that it offers. Consequently, there is a reason to expect growth of the company to increase the price of its stock. The higher the probability that a company will increase the value of its net assets, the higher the expected price of its stock, and vice versa. Hence, a stock can be a perfectly legitimate investment if the company issuing it is not fraudulent. The value of an app coin. On the other hand, the value of an app coin can move completely independently of the value of the app itself. This is because the value of a currency is due to the value of the network of people holding it, which is a logically separate concept to the network using the app. The value of the app is a matter entirely of the service it provides, whereas the value of the app coin is partly due to the value of the app and partly to its competition with other currencies. If there are two currencies to choose, there is a relative disutility of holding the one which has the smaller market cap. The disutility becomes stronger as the difference between their market caps becomes greater. Because any app coin must compete with Bitcoin, there is inherently an aversion to holding the app coin rather than Bitcoin. This means that an app can always improve by transitioning to use Bitcoin instead of the app coin. Since we are talking about open source projects, it is always possible for anyone to fork an existing app and make the changes himself. It is furthermore not necessary to assume that the app must be forked to remove its dependence on the app coin. As soon as the developers have sold out of their pre-mined app coins, there will be nothing preventing them from upgrading the app themselves to support Bitcoin. All nodes running the app who are acting as service providers will also desire this because it will generate more business for them. I do not see how investors in the app coin could expect to prevent this. That should eliminate the expectation that any app coin could ever be a good investment. Beating a dead horse. Even if the app could somehow remain locked behind the app coin wall, there is still no reason to expect the app coin to become valuable. If the users of the app cannot avoid holding the app coin entirely, then they would prefer to hold it for the shortest time possible. There is an opportunity cost for all time spent holding the app coin because better currencies are available, which can be expected to provide better opportunities. There is thus an economic incentive to provide services, which make the app coin as invisible as possible, so as to provide access to the app with as little hassle as possible. But necessarily, as a given number of users learns to hold their app coins for lower and lower periods of time, the value of the coin must decrease, and the price of the app services in its own app coin must increase. Suppose there were, say, 100 people sharing 1,000 app coins at a given time with about 10 each, and they learn to get rid of their app coins to use the service twice as quickly. Then it must be more like only 50 people sharing 1,000 app coins with 20 each. Even if the user base increased rapidly, it could not for long counteract the incentive to make app coin insignificant to the app user. Not everyone buys the app coin to interact with the system, of course. Some buy it as an investment. However, after understanding the economics described in this article, investors will no longer be so innocent as to see value in an app coin. An investor could not ultimately expect to make a return on an app coin, given that there is an incentive to disconnect the coin from the app. Once that happens, the app coin is simply another altcoin. Furthermore, the more that investors realize that their investors also understand the worthlessness of app coins, the less successful will the app coin be as a method of funding projects. If there are not enough gullible investors to buy the coin, then the developers can sell as many as they want without raising enough money. The only reason they can be used now is that the issues are not yet generally understood to be a scam. However, this is precisely what they are. It is grossly unethical to sell something which adds no value and which can be expected, always, to become worthless in the end. Conclusion. App coins are a terrible idea, and furthermore, this shouldn't require such a deep analysis to realize. They are clearly just a needless complexity. Why would I want to use different money for my gas, food, and rent? This defeats the whole purpose of having a money economy. How can these app coin proponents think they're accomplishing something with that? It's like they're trying to invent a barter system again, except improve it by adding trade barriers and a bunch of imaginary extra goods that aren't useful for anything but that people are required to trade with for some reason. In fact, it's not like that. It's exactly what they're actually doing. App coins are pump and dump scams disguised as Rube Goldberg machines. So don't get fooled. And I'll read the edit notes here at the end too. The first one is, I have been criticized over my use of the word fraud in an earlier version of this article. This usually implies an intent to deceive. I do not know whether the app coins that already exist were sold under unintentionally false pretenses. I merely consider it to be a likely possibility. As a comparison, if someone were selling a perpetual motion machine or homeopathic medicine, then obviously he is making false claims about his product. Without evidence as to what the seller is thinking, it cannot be established that he's deliberately lying. However, the truth should be so easily available to the seller that depiction on his part becomes a likely explanation for his actions. In the case of AppCoins, I do not think that the issues discussed in this article are very difficult to understand, so I would suspect someone who spent a lot of time working on them to have come to some understanding of the problem with them, and the ethical problem of selling them. However, the important issue is not whether the seller knows the truth, but rather that he is harming people either way. I do not intend to emphasize the issue of intent with this article, and it is really irrelevant to the main point, but that was what much of the response to this article was about. This response proves I used the word fraud incorrectly. There is a concept called constructive fraud, which can apply when a seller misrepresents a product in spite of an ethical duty to represent it correctly. This concept fits better for what I mean, but if I wanted to say that, I should have explained it more clearly. They are deceivers in the same sense that quack doctors are deceivers, which is to say that they might be deceiving others, or they might be deceiving themselves. And then, two, there is a similar effect between Bitcoin and the dollar, but because Bitcoin is such an enormous technological achievement over the dollar, Bitcoin continues to grow despite the dollar's superior network. If an AppCoin could manage to reduce transaction costs by an order of magnitude versus Bitcoin, then it should be expected to defeat Bitcoin and all the other AppCoins, too. Now, a lot of great points in this. He and Michael Goldstein kind of go over this really well in the podcast, which is only about 38 minutes, I think. I would definitely recommend it if you got the time and you want something else to listen to. But I do have a few points that I want to address. First in the podcast and what he notes in the article here is that cash works because everybody uses it. Yes, absolutely. The market pushes toward a standardization of the medium of exchange. And any basic economics will tell you this. It's incentivized to come up with a common monetary language, just like it's important to have a common language with your community. You know, if you're speaking English and somebody else is speaking Spanish, shit is slow, expensive, and annoying to do anything. So just like that in the market, if you're using Litecoin and the other person is using Bitcoin, then yes, it's a real headache as far as a monetary coming to a monetary arrangement is, because you're dealing with price discovery of two different items, two individual networks, which price discovery comes with a cost. Price discovery is a cost. It's a very elaborate and lengthy process to create a market price. The bigger the network, the more accurate, quote-unquote, the price is. So I agree with that point. Absolutely, as far as money goes, a standard is preferable and incentivized in the market. Stocks pay dividends, or it represents a share of the profit or the company, and that's why people buy stocks. Yes, again, so this goes back to, is an AppCoin a great way for an open source project to raise money? I'll reference the example that they use in the podcast. They're talking about something called Cornucopia Coin, and it only works as technically as cash in the Cornucopia network, and they were just using it hypothetical that Cornucopia Coin can just give you whatever the hell you want, which is probably best for explaining the point, because then we don't have to argue about whether what they are providing is useful at all. And it should not be, their point was that it should not be valued as a portion of the network. And since you can only use the coin in order to pay for the service or pay for usage in the network, there's no use in holding it. There's no value in actually holding it over the long term. Now, I have a little bit of a disagreement with this, and here's why. Because I think we see this all the time with tokens in the real world, in what we see today. For instance, And now these are not scarce tokens that have their own price on the market at all. These are essentially tokens in offering from whatever company that I use on a regular basis. So let's talk about these networks in that way, because I really do want to get to the heart of this. I want to understand if that is the only economic principle at work, because if that's true, then they are right. Michael Goldstein and Daniel Krawitz are absolutely right. There's no, as far as money goes, there's absolutely no market incentive to make things more complicated or more costly. However, I have, I think, $20 in my Starbucks app right now. I have probably, I think I have $15 worth of gems in that stupid Clash of Clans game. I think I still had some diamonds in an old game. It's like one of those free games like Farmville or something. It wasn't the Facebook game. I don't go on Facebook. But, ooh, a better example, League of Legends. I had Riot Points, and I would save them for the next... they had like skins for the characters or whatever, and you needed Riot Points to purchase those skins. And so I would love to, you know, buy that stupid crap. And, you know, I think I dedicated myself to, I'm going to spend $30 on this game or $20 on this game if I play it for a couple of months, and then I'll make the investment. I played League of Legends religiously for years. But regardless, so these are tokens. Now, these are centrally issue tokens, and they represent dollar shares, like an equivalent dollar shares. They were offering discounts. I would always sit around and wait for them to be at a better price, which was kind of funny. But these aren't scarce. So as the value of the network grows, as more people use League of Legends and buy League of Legends Riot Points, I don't profit or benefit from this at all. However, in an open source network, nobody really owns it, and the developers don't actually have to adhere to any concept of using Riot Points. But let's take the example of League of Legends and call Riot Points their own token, and let's say they fluctuate in value. Now, one point that they make in both the article and in the podcast is that the more efficient the use, and the more the use of the token is done by the market, the less valuable it is. It decreases the value of it, because all you can really do with it is pay with it. Now, I don't particularly agree with that, because you have to buy it to pay for it. And if the network is stable, if you have the same number of people buying the token as using the service, well, then the price is relatively stable. Now, I'm not giving any credence to the velocity of money equation. I've dug into that, and I think it's pretty much BS, because real value is, like they said, in investment. It's in holding the token for later usage. But if it's usable on the League of Legends network, and you know you want to use League of Legends, why is it not that a growth in that network represents a growth in the value of that token? If, of course, the network is only using that token, which right now, League of Legends only uses Riot Points. Being open source, there's no commitment to that. And I totally understand that point. They can just use Bitcoin. Why wouldn't they just use Bitcoin? But let's say the developers have purchased or gotten paid in the quote-unquote Riot Points. Don't they now have skin in the game to ensure that that network is valuable and that the network continues to use Riot Points? Now, this dynamic gets even more interesting with something like a governance model. So let's say developers actually have to hold Riot Points in order to be able to push their upgrades toward the network. Like, they have a stake in the network that gives them essentially some degree of developer influence. And then same with the pro players is, like, let's say they want to offer their stake up to say, no, I don't like this new character, or I don't think this new addition is fair. Well, being that they've accumulated tons of Riot Points over the years, maybe through competitions or, you know, so on and so forth, then they have the say to essentially reject or put or push toward a different change or nerfing the character, so to speak. Like, let's say a developer wants to come in and it's like, well, let's just use Bitcoin. Well, they don't have any governance power to issue a new upgrade or issue a new character or anything in the network, which would still be collectively agreed on by the rest of the network, because they aren't holding any riot points or they aren't contributing to the value of their culture, the value of their individual community network. And that's I think, a new dynamic and part of this that can't be outright dismissed, because there's a lot of abstraction going on here. It's not a direct relationship. The app, the coin, and the software itself are essentially all in one, if this is a decentralized means of an open source change in the software, essentially. That being said, there's a decent counterargument that, you know, yeah, this is open source, so why the hell would anybody commit to just a single network? Like, let's say the developers push a character. Let's say we get a fork. Let's say the characters push a develop. The developers push a character that a strong portion of the network doesn't agree with, and the staking ends up being 70-30, and that 30% gets really pissed off. This is open source, so they can just copy it, make their own new riot points, take their riot points with them, you know, dump theirs, create this entirely new game that's almost identical, except it's not got this character that 30% doesn't like. So what does that do? Let's say they give up. Like, I don't even want to use riot points anymore. I don't want to use riot 2.0. I just want to use Bitcoin with my network. Now the game is essentially out there with the exact same setup and all the exact same code, and now it just uses Bitcoin. But if the network effect is less, you've got fewer people using the coin, fewer people invested in the project because fewer people like that character lineup versus the character lineup of the original with the Riot token. So, I don't know, I agree that there doesn't seem to be any committed adherence to something, to some certain token, particularly in open source. Like both have mentioned, you can just take the code and start it with something else. But then again, you can also just start up a Minecraft server, but there are still dedicated servers. I mean, I think they even did that with a World of Warcraft and stuff. Like, they'd have their own servers where, you know, they'd have their own world and stuff, and they'd copy a lot of the code, but they'd be able to freely change things on their own. All that stuff. So, but these networks weren't nearly as huge and didn't see nearly the development or the fine-tuning as the original, you know, World of Warcraft or Minecraft. To say that just because monetary incentives push towards standardization, I don't think that's the only principle at play here. It's very different from a centralized token that is just pegged one-to-one with a dollar. When I go to Starbucks or when I buy Riot Points right now, I am buying a specific amount at a specific price. I come back 6 months later, it's the same amount at the same price. So it's not the same relationship. It's not a direct comparison. But also, why isn't it a legitimate comparison? Because there is a portion of that going on. I am buying Starbucks points so that I can spend Starbucks points at Starbucks later. And Starbucks, being dedicated to Starbucks points, will often offer me discounts or give me extra points or benefits in the app or their coffee purchasing. Riot would be more the example of giving me benefits in the app if I have Riot points as opposed to just buying it for free or buying it outright with dollars. So why can that not be sustained in an open source network? It's not perfect, and there are still a lot of economic systems at play, but if you expect to use the app in the future, why would you not necessarily just hold it? Like, why would I bother getting rid of it all right now? Let's say I bought $20 worth with the expectation of spending $15 on these three skins that I liked, or, you know, whatever. I'm still holding five, and I'm not necessarily going to get rid of that. If the price of these things is fluctuating, God, I don't know. See, there's a portion of me, like, for instance, I hold a little bit of Stratus, and most of that is because, genuinely, because I actually want to invest partially in the work that the Stratus team is doing. And I don't mean that in the sense that I think I'm going to make like $1 billion off of it. I mean, that would be great. But technically, in this regard, I have two options. I can donate directly, or I can buy the Stratus token. And knowing that the Stratus team is holding those tokens, they are receiving increased value of their holdings because I've purchased it. So I see a team that's trying to bring Tumblebit to a reality and has in their quote-unquote roadmap that one stage of it is to make the Tumblebit payment hub, which is something I find really interesting. And so, yeah, I could just donate it, but then that money is gone. What if I just bought a token that essentially did the exact same thing and is essentially a stake? It's my personal stake in making sure that that project gets done. Now, I can't really code myself, but to some degree, I am invested in that. Like, I want to see that project get done. I'm contacting and asking the developers questions and stuff because it excites me. And I had a stake in it before just out of my personal excitement, but now I have what is technically a monetary stake in that. And yeah, they don't have any fiduciary duty to pay me back or anything like that, but they certainly weren't going to pay back a donation. You know, like, I'm not going to make any money off a donation. I'm just trying to see the project get created, which was my goal in buying the token, too. So I have the same purpose in both situations, but the dynamic of whether or not the money just vanishes or whether or not I'm holding a stake in the project getting done is a little bit different. And yes, they do not have any fiduciary duty to pay me back. Isn't that kind of irrelevant from my perspective? Because if I had just donated, I wouldn't even care about getting paid back. And if I lose some money in the token, which I have, well, so what? Again, I am doing it to invest in Tumblebit. Like, I just am trying to, I am essentially trying to donate to the team. Is that not what I have done, essentially? So it's worth losing everything in that investment if Tumblebit becomes a reality. That's my risk. So why is the same not necessarily true for League of Legends? Wouldn't that technically mean that you had skin in the game? That it would mean that even if the development team disappeared, even if the current server shut down, everybody holding Riot coins or Riot tokens would be incentivized to keep the project running. Everybody who was skilled at the game, I feel like the token itself could offer an incentive to keep the network alive post the company being gone, because everyone has invested in loving the game and the network and the players and the style and everything about it and attempting to keep it alive. Is that enough to hold value in something that's not entirely necessary, but only represents an abstract connection to it? I don't know. But it's at least interesting. I think there might be value in having them actually able to define, maybe in some smart contract way, what the token actually will be on the network, and what degree of ownership you have. And maybe it will become more of a partial security, partial pay for the app, and development and stuff for said game, as well as some degree of governance or stake in the concept or the direction of the project. But I see tokens everywhere in normal daily life, and that's not just because, yes, you can buy all of those tokens with dollars, but and those services. You can buy all those services just with dollars. But money is a form of community, really. So every major, every overarching, like large community often has sub-communities. It has subcultures. It has miniature little groups that just do their own little thing. And if there's a token that represents a share in that community, that development, that game, that whatever it is, I don't necessarily think that just because the market wants a standard that there won't be some sort of a cultural push to have your own token, just like there's cultural pushes to have your own language, to have inside jokes. The money is not straightforward. Money is a very bizarre, abstract thing. And I'm just not entirely sold on the concept that there's just one economic principle at play here, and that's the standardization of money. It absolutely cannot be ignored. But I don't think it's as straightforward as Daniel Krawitz is making it seem. I don't know. Maybe I'm completely full of it and I'm just extrapolating way too much from this. But I don't know. I think there is a bit of a utility in having your community and having your users and your developers all have a stake in the project that's happening. Like, what would a company look like if it didn't have a exact centralized business? You know, like, what does a project look like absent of a company? And how do you fund it? So, I don't know. It could all just be complete nonsense, and I could just be pulling stuff out of the air that doesn't actually have any... It only has some, you know, mild intrigue rather than any economic utility to it at its heart. And it could all just poof up in smoke. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if I saw a future with zero tokens whatsoever and it was all just nonsense and everything was a side chain essentially for whatever purpose they were trying to make it. But then I also wouldn't be totally surprised if I saw the opposite, that some of these projects actually went on to become what may one day be considered decentralized companies. Like, they're just communities that are all trying to work towards one thing. So I think the topic still needs a lot more discussion and argumentation, and I am definitely still going to explore all of the avenues of this, and I want to see someone else's take yet again. And so we'll come back to this at a later date. Hopefully I at least put some questions in your mind regarding my point. If you have any means to or any desire to address some of the points that I made, that would be absolutely wonderful. I would love to hear any rebuttals of my bullshit. It's my favorite thing, so feel free. And make sure to tag me in it or link me in it so that I can either respond or explore further. So always open for that. With that, though, I think it's time to end this Crypto Economy quick read. Again, if you want to, I also encourage you to listen to that podcast episode that Trill linked me to. And Trillobyte, thank you so much for this. I was looking for something exactly like this, and I love this discussion. So keep it coming. If you got anything else you want me to read, please tag me in it. I'm always up for it. This was at the NakamotoInstitute.org by Daniel Krawitz. Again, it's titled App Coins Are Snake Oil, and the podcast is the Crypto-Mises Podcast, and it was episode 1, and I'll link to that in the tweet as well. So thank you, guys. This has been a fun one, and I will catch you next time on the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy.